Notoriety Sports Network. Breaking news, live shows, unprecedented content. Notoriety Sports Network, built different.
Welcome back to the NSN Philly Show. If you have not checked us out on other platforms, make sure to check us out on YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, obviously Facebook, LinkedIn. Find us everywhere. I hope you guys had a nice Easter and a nice Easter break. But how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, man. Excited to have three of our teams literally playing at the same time right now. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's actually nice, you know, having some normality back with all our sports teams. So let's get talking about them.
Yeah, it sucks we can't watch them tonight. I know two of the teams are live right now. We're going to start out with a team that is not currently playing, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles. Recent reports have come out saying that Zach Ertz, if he is not traded by the draft, he will be traded on draft night. If not, he will be released. We still have the option to obviously keep him, but the Eagles have plenty of options to go with Zach Ertz. What do you guys think we should do?
I think it's possible that in the draft, depending on how, you know, the picks fall, they may look to move up, move back down, and maybe Zach Ertz could be a piece. But I know this for a fact. He's not going to be an Eagle next year. So whether he's cut, whether they trade him in the draft, whether they keep him during the draft and then trade him later, something's going to happen, and he will not be an Eagle next year.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see. Maybe it's a draft night trade. Maybe Howie pulls some rabbit out of the hat again, makes a crazy trade to either move up or maybe some later picks and swap something. I don't know. But, yeah, I agree with Eric. He's not going to be around next year. It's unfortunate because I love the guy. I love watching him play with us over the years. But, yeah, he's not going to be around by come next year.
I think a lot of people underestimate the, you know, what he's on the last year of his deal. That's going to significantly decrease his value. I think a lot of people forget about that. You know, he still has some good years left in him, but he only has 1 year left on that deal. And unless that gets restructured prior, we're not going to get more than probably a fifth or sixth rounder for him.
Yeah. He's restructuring anything. He won't restructure. He already would have done it by now.
I know it's not likely that we keep Zach, but I think the Eagles should seriously consider keeping him for two main reasons. And one, like you had just said, his value is decreased. I know he's only on a one-year deal worth $8.5 million, also with a $12 million cap hit. So there's that reason. I don't think you can get anything more except for like a fifth-round pick for him, which isn't – I don't think that's worth his value. I think wherever he would go, he would be quite productive, not – or more productive than he was this season. But his value has decreased significantly, which sucks. But secondly, we don't have – any veteran receivers on our team. Greg Ward's been in the league for about 3 years. Rager's obviously a second-year guy, and Fulgham's in his third year. We're so young at the receiving core. I mean, it's good to have Dallas Goedert going into, I believe, his fourth year, if I'm not mistaken. But we are so young at receiver, at tight end, at running back. We need some veteran guy, and we did not go after anybody in free agency. I know it's not likely that we keep him, but we really should be keeping him. He can mentor all of these receivers like how he did last year, but just with his age and with who we're working with right now, we should really consider keeping him.
I understand what you're saying, Sean, and it'd be really nice to keep him, like I said. But like I said before in the show, he wouldn't be here for a mentor. He doesn't want to do that. He's not a Brent Celek. Brent Celek didn't care. He was towards the end of his career anyway. So he was like, I don't have no issues taking that mentorship role to the backseat role to Zach Ertz. But Ertz, unless they put something on the table for him that he's going to absolutely love, we're not keeping him. He won't be around. It's inevitable. He's unhappy, especially with the top management here. Granted, we'll see.
Don't forget.
What are you saying?
Don't, don't forget last year. I mean, his effort clearly wasn't there.
Yeah.
He had no interest in mentoring anybody. He had no interest in being a team player. He, you know, his production wasn't there last year, and it was clear that his effort wasn't there either. So I don't want him back. I like Zach. I love what he's done, and he's a legend for, you know, the Super Bowl catch. But I don't want him on this team next year, period. I don't even care if we just cut him and don't get anything for him at this point. I think the team would be better off without him.
You have to get something for him. He's still worth the value. I know we have so many picks in this year's draft, or we're going to trade him. Might as well move him to 2022 for a fifth-round pick or a sixth-round pick. But the $12 million cap hit, that's another big hit. I don't think we're going to be signing anybody else in free agency. And I don't think Zach would be a mentor. I know he's still capable of putting up another 700-800-yard season, and that would be very valuable on this team because right now we don't know what these receivers are going to do. It seems like Rager's going to get an increased role. Greg Ward, it seems like he's going to be pushed to the back. I think we're going to get a rookie wide receiver. So his role, whether it's in the slot or on the outside, is going to be decreased. And Fulgham, who honestly knows, after week 8 of last year, he was put to the bench by Alshon Jeffrey, which is still a horrible decision by Doug Peterson and the whole Eagles organization. But I don't think he'd be a mentor. I still think he'd be able to find a role on this team, even if his role is significantly reduced. The Eagles still like those two tight end sets. And I just think he would find value. And I think the Eagles would find value using him still.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see, to be honest with you. I don't know where they're going to go. If we go get a tight end, if we somehow land Pitts, that'd be great. But I doubt it. I want him, but whatever. Ertz is going to be gone, dude. And you got to face the music, bro. He's gone.
Yeah. And going off of Kyle Pitts, I think he will now be taken inside of the top 8. If you did not see, there was a trade that went down with the Panthers and the Jets where the Panthers received quarterback Sam Darnold, fourth-year quarterback for in return, the Jets received a 2021 sixth-round pick and a 2022 second-round pick and a fourth-round pick. Darnold needed to get out of New York. It just wasn't working well there. It seems like they're on the uprise, but not with Sam Darnold. It looks like they're going to go Zach Wilson with the second overall pick. But how does that affect our pick at 12? Do you think we have a chance to now go quarterback?
No. I don't think so. I don't think we're going to go quarterback at 12. After every team up in the top 5, 6 people now all need quarterbacks, basically. Everybody needs a quarterback, essentially, minus like a handful of teams at this point. So, yes and no, we could do it. Should we? Absolutely not. I don't think we should at all. We have way too many needs that need to be addressed on the offensive side of the ball. And defensive side of the ball to even get a quarterback. We drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round last year. At that point, drafting a quarterback in the first round this year would just be a waste. Absolutely waste. It'd be absolutely stupid and probably be one of the stupidest things ever. If Howie does that, then he deserves to get kicked instantly. I don't care. Get him out of there on draft night. I don't care what happens. But no, we shouldn't go QB at 12.
I'll tell you one thing that it's going to affect my mock draft because I honestly thought the Jets were going to stick with Sam and, you know, trade that pick. But I don't know why a lot of people are questioning the difference in, you know, the impact for other teams because, yeah, while now Carolina may not be looking at taking a quarterback, the Jets are. So there's still going to be the same amount of quarterbacks, in my opinion, taken regardless of this trade. I mean, clearly it's going to impact some of those higher teams that are right around number 8 where the Panthers are. It's going to impact the Dolphins, it's going to impact the Bengals, it's going to impact the Lions, but it's not necessarily going to impact the Eagles, in my opinion. I don't think there's a chance we're going to take a quarterback at 12 because I do believe there's going to be 5 quarterbacks taken in the top 10 still. I think a team's going to trade up, and I think there's a lot of teams up there, like Reggie said, that need a quarterback. I still think Atlanta's going to take a quarterback. I mean, there's a lot of teams, and people get desperate as it gets closer to draft night. The pressure, you know, increases, and teams are, you know, maybe willing to do something different. So, you know, I don't think it's really going to impact the Eagles as far as the quarterback position. It may impact them as far as who they take, but I think it really just depends on how the rest of the picks fall, because I think right now the biggest question marks are at 4 and 5, which is Atlanta and Cincinnati. You know, a lot of people are relating Ja'Marr Chase to Cincinnati because of his previous playing time at LSU with Joe Burrow. That makes sense. But after Burrow's injury last year, a lot of people are talking about Sewell at that spot. So that if they take Sewell, that's going to drastically change what Miami does, what Detroit does, what Carolina possibly does. And same thing if they take Chase. So I think really that Cincinnati pick and the Atlanta pick is what's really going to change a lot for those teams below.
Yeah, well, Carolina now shouldn't go quarterback because they still have Teddy Bridgewater. So they will most likely start Sam Darnold because he has more potential than Teddy in his career. And that could open the door now for the Denver Broncos because they have Drew Lock, but it doesn't seem like they're satisfied with how Drew Lock has been playing. So it could even open it up in the back door for the bottom half of the top 10. And I've seen reports now with Atlanta that they may stick with Matt Ryan. So in the long haul, it could really decrease the amount of quarterbacks that are taken in the top 11. And that could really affect where we draft, because if there's only three quarterbacks taken or four quarterbacks taken, that's just more skilled players on the board. But personally, we can't draft a quarterback. I don't care if Trey Lance is there or if there's a quarterback there that we really like. It would be the same issue that we had with Carson Wentz, where there's not enough supporting cast around him. This is the perfect time. I still think we should go wide receiver. I know Chase will be gone, but you still have the other two big names, Waddle and Smith, to take there. You could go there. I think Kyle Pitts will go to Carolina now. It seems like they have – well, they did lose Curtis Samuel, so that will affect that. But DJ Moore has been quite impressive. And Christian McCaffrey has been very impressive. So I don't think they'll go receiver. Kyle Pitts would probably be perfect there. But you can't take a quarterback if you're the Philadelphia Eagles. There's so many issues to be addressed. And I don't think quarterback's one that we need to address this season.
I agree. I mean, even Smith might be taken off the board if we're going to be honest with you, because
he'll be gone
ahead of us. And you know Dallas.
I'd be fine with Waddle.
I'd not. Waddle, maybe.
That's when the door kind of opens where you can go defense at that point. If there's a Michael Parsons there.
If he's there, take him. If Michael Parsons is there, take him. I wouldn't even be mad at that pick.
If Devontae Smith is there, I would 100% take him with that spot. There's a reason he was the Heisman winner, regardless of his weight. He's somebody.
Scissors for it. We'll pick one.
Yeah, but if it's just Waddle there, then you can go a cornerback. But I really think Hurts is going to struggle with this current offense, especially if we lose Zach Ertz.
If you can pick the Heisman Trophy winner at 12, I don't know how anyone can be mad at that, man. So if he's there, I'm cool with Howie taking Smith. Yeah. I just don't think he will be. I think at 12 is that spot where I just see, you know, all the guys have been talking about and all the guys that are getting hyped up, that elite. I mean, we're going to get a good player regardless, but, you know, that elite class, I don't think we can get any of them anymore. I think we're too far out. I do think there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks taken. And I still think that we're not going to get one of those guys. Surtain, Chase, you know, Sewell, Smith, Pitts, none of those guys. They're all going to be gone. Maybe Parsons, but it's going to be tough. It really depends, you know, if there's any like surprise picks that we're not expecting. You know, these mock drafts are, you know, all over the place. Some of them are consistent with certain teams, but it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, there is some sleepers, though, whether it's on the offensive line or defensive line. There is a guy or two that could be snagged there, but with the talent of some of these heavy name players like Devontae Smith and Parsons and just all of the guys we have discussed, I don't think you can pass up on that. And that's what's going to make it tough for the Eagles selection, because I think a lot of those guys will be gone as well. So I could see Howie trying to trade up. I'm just not sure with who. And it's definitely not going to be one or two picks before, because that's the Giants and the Cowboys. So they're in a tough situation.
They're kind of going to have to just go with whatever falls to them. That when you trade out of the top 10, you're almost accepting the fact that you're going to have to take whoever falls to you in that spot.
Yeah, that makes it tough. And the Eagles could go for a trade. I know a name who has been lingering around is Russell Wilson. And with the QB carousel continuing, is there a chance that we go after Wilson?
I wouldn't put it past Howie Roseman to do anything involving the quarterback position. Like I said in the last show, they're always going to look to improve that position no matter what. Do I think it's a smart move? No. I think what they've already done is has put them in the best position for success. They're in position to get potentially 3 first round picks next year. And they're going to have that extra pick as well for the other pick this year from the Colts. And if Jalen Hurts gets the opportunity this year and plays well, we use those picks to build around him. And if he doesn't play well, we have a lot of assets next year to use in the draft to move up to get the best quarterback, the second best quarterback in the draft. And then we're not going to have to pay $30, $40 million to a quarterback next year. So even if we have to use our draft assets, our draft picks, to move up and get a new quarterback if Hurts doesn't play well, we'll be able to spend money in free agency next year and surround that new quarterback with talent. So what they've already done, in my opinion, has set themselves up for success the best. I don't want to see any more moves made. I want them to just use their picks, try to build around, you know, the team this year with the next 2 years in mind and see what they can do this year. You know, we have a quarterback who hasn't had an opportunity to prove himself yet. And we also have a brand new head coach with a whole new coaching staff on both the offensive and defensive side. Remember, the defensive side last year, a lot of people were criticizing who was the coordinator, Schwartz, last year. So maybe that we have a new defensive coordinator. We see both sides of the ball improve. We don't know what they're going to do. They may come in and have a much better strategy, much better game plan than the previous coaching staff. So that can make an impact. I just think they've set themselves up well with those picks next year. And with the draft, not draft, with the, you know, the cap we're going to have next year, is we're going to be able to spend some money.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it'd be nice to have Russell Wilson here. It'd be phenomenal. I'd be very happy about it. But, well, we got to throw the whole book at him, everything we have basically to get him. I mean, there's no point in doing that right now, especially. We don't really have much leeway. Yeah, we have draft picks, but we really don't have anything else worth giving up to get him. I mean, I love Russell Wilson. He's a great quarterback, great NFL player, a great guy overall. He'd be great in our locker room, but we have to look more towards the future. He's getting older too. You know, last year he was sacked way too many times, and Seattle's offensive line is trash anyway.
He's the most sacked quarterback over the past 9 seasons. So you can partially blame that on him, but their offensive line has not been very good.
It's really never been good, and like it just really sucks for him, especially. But us trading to get him now, that's stupid. I would never do that. I mean, we pretty much have to throw the whole constitutional library at the Seahawks to get him. I'm not doing that. That's stupid. That would have been as dumb as the Sixers trading for Harden. Right? Like, I'm just saying, it's stupid. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, there's no point to start another quarterback controversy. You have to give the man a chance. I know Philadelphia is split on keeping him and giving him a chance or not, but you really have to give him a chance. And like you had just said, what does he demand in the trade market? He's probably 3 to 4 first round picks. You're probably giving them Hurts. You have to make the cap work since he's on a max deal. And just looking at it from Seattle, I don't think they would do it either. They just signed Gerald Everett, the tight end. They signed a fullback, resigned their center and their guard and a tackle. So, I mean, Wilson was upset about the offensive line play because he was looking at Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. I don't think he got sacked once, maybe not even touched. So just looking at it from Seattle's point of view, I don't know why they would do that.
No.
I don't think you can really move off him. And the assets we have outside of draft picks, there's no point. I mean – I don't know what we could offer. We could offer the Miami first round pick in 2022 and our first round pick, but I don't think it's worth it for either side. And I wouldn't be upset if we traded for him, but that could really set us back, especially with what our offense is working with right now. I don't think the change of quarterback would really benefit.
Yeah. We're already set back too far anyway. Let's be real. We're already way too far behind the eight ball. We already have more quarterback problems than we have quarterback problems. We've had quarterback problems. So let's not add more fuel to the fire. Let's just try to push forward and get.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. Moving on to the last topic for the birds. There's been a Carson Wentz photo. It's been hanging down from the link over the past 2 to 3 seasons, but now Wentz is gone. Who should be put up there? It's pretty controversial.
Travis Fulgham.
Stop.
You think I'm playing?
All right, what's your serious answer?
What's my serious answer? Fletch. Or no, Lane Johnson.
Lane Johnson?
Lane Johnson, wow.
Lane Johnson, why not?
Yeah, I mean, right with Fletcher Cox, and then
why not? Why not Lane? Why not Lane?
I think Fletcher is a better pick. He embodies.
But why not Lane?
I would say Fletcher over Lane.
You can put either one, but why not Lane, though?
Yeah, but Fletcher means – I think he means more.
Fletcher's made a lot more of an impact lately, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, because he hasn't been hurt for like once, but let's be real. That right side of the offensive line has been pretty stout the past, what, five seasons since Lane has been there.
He's not even the best – Eagles offensive lineman. Fletcher Cox, you can argue that he is. He's arguably a top 2 to 3 defensive tackle.
Yeah. Well, D tackle wise, he's the only one we pretty much have who's worth anything.
When you think of the Eagles right now, you think of Fletcher Cox. No one thinks of Lane Johnson.
I like Lane. I've always liked Lane. Lane is hands down one of the best tackles in the league. And let's be real, anybody who's on that side of the ball goes against Lane. Lane puts them on their ass.
All right.
He's a great player, but it's just not the first guy I would think of. I mean, it is telling when for this question that the first two players that came to mind were both on the defensive line, Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham. But mm-hmm. You guys are going to laugh at me for this, but I would put Jalen Hurts on there. He's the QB one, number one, you know, changes number now. He's number one. I think you got to roll with the quarterback, man. You know, as many fans out there that don't like Jalen Hurts, there's many fans that love Jalen Hurts. So that would definitely pump them up, pump the fans up. And I think it'd be cool to see him up there.
You know, I thought the Lane Johnson answer was bad, but that is 100% worse. I think you have to earn being up on the stadium where every Philadelphia fan who walks to the games is like, I remember when he did that. I don't think he's earned it yet, but
I don't know if it's about what you've done. I think it's about what you're going to do.
What jerseys are we rocking? I'm not rocking a jersey this week.
I think I'm wearing a Phillies, right? Philly shirt. Old school retro Philly shirt. But
old school Moses, baby.
Yeah. Okay. I'd have to say Jason Kelce for this. I think he just embodies Philadelphia Eagles football.
No, you know what, Sean? I'll give you him. But you know what? If you're going to go with him, put him up at the parade then, the Eagles.
When I think of the Philadelphia Eagles, I just think of his speech at the Super Bowl parade where he's wearing that huge costume and he's just ranting about the underdog speech. I just think he embodies it. Yeah, put that picture up.
Oh, you're saying, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Put that picture up. Put him up.
I changed my mind. I'm in agreement with that.
If they do that, I will say Jason Kelce. But right next to it has to be the picture of Chris Long too, because that's just funny too.
Yeah, with the dog mask. I was gonna say with the dog mask, but yeah, the AI.
I thought that was Lane. I thought Lane did that.
Lane had the dog mask.
They both did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing. After every game, they would put on the dog mask in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. See one of those two. That would be awesome. I'd like to see what Kelce went after. I can't believe we didn't even say Brandon Graham either. I know you touched on it, Eric, but I mean he did have the strip sack. And
like every strip sack we've had, an important strip sack we've had in the past like 10 years has been him. So
yeah, he's been as a much as a vocal leader as Jason Kelce, but I think Jason Kelce would only be right to put on front of the stadium.
Let's put it up to the viewers too. You know, anybody that's out there watching, comment. You know, who you think should be up there? We want to hear what you have to say as well.
Yeah, you could go young too. You could go with a Sanders or a Goddard, but I think those veteran guys are who you have to keep up there.
Travis Fulgham.
We'll see. Yeah, maybe they'll put Travis Fulgham or Greg Ward. You know,
my boys.
I'm sure that would get all the fans electric.
Yeah, bro, you never know.
Yeah, moving on to the Sixers.
Anything, so
I think we've covered all the Eagles we can tonight. There's not much news with them until the draft, at least. Moving on to the Sixers. Over their last three games since last week, they're 2-1. They defeated the Cavs and the Timberwolves. That's when Joel Embiid had come back. But they lost to the Grizzlies on Sunday night on Easter. Embiid, he came and played against the Timberwolves finally. It was about a 12-game absence, but it was good to see him back. He played very well. him and Cap battle. But I think the real players who have stood out to me is Shake Milton and Tobias Harris. I really think Tobias has taken on that that leadership role. He's really doing it all. He's playing better defense than he has in past seasons, and he's scoring the same amount. And Shake Milton is someone that's going to be so important for this team in the playoffs. You really do need that sixth man who can score lights out of the ball. And I think he's really shown it over the past three games. He's averaging 18 points over his last three. And it's good for him to boost his confidence right now because he's going to be so important.
Shake was very impressive against Cleveland. I think he had 27 points.
Yep.
It was nice to see Embiid back. I just really wish he would have played in the previous game. You know, I'm not a fan of him sitting out after being out for a few weeks. I still don't really understand that. I think if anything, it just hurts. Like when you're coming back from an injury and you're trying to get back into a routine, you want to be as consistent as possible with doing those activities. And I just would think that maybe instead of playing him for, you know, a full game, if they know they have a back-to-back, split his minutes among the two games, like play him 20 minutes in each game or something. So that way he has the ability to at least impact both games, because every single game is going to matter for this team this year. Getting that number one seed and having that at the end of the season is going to be very important now that the fans are back. And we got to remember as well, the season is pushed back. So that we still have a lot of basketball left. Normally the season would be ending in about a week or so, but we still have a good, month or two probably left of the regular season. Yes. So by then I'm sure there'll be even more fans back in the stands, and that's going to be really important. The Sixers play much better at home, so it's going to be very important. I want Embiid to impact as many games as possible. I don't care if he plays 20 minutes or 25 minutes. I want him to impact the game. I want him in the game in the beginning. I want him in the game at the end. And I want him to be able to make a difference.
Yeah. Them sitting them, honestly, the Memphis game is kind of like a trap game. You know, it was just kind of one of those, it was a back-to-back type deal, and it was just kind of there. You know, if they won it, cool. If they didn't, eh. But, like, right now we kind of need as much wins as we can. Luckily, the Nets always somehow manage to lose when we lose, so it's a beautiful helping. But I don't mind them really load managing him, because he has such a terrible history of getting hurt back and coming back from injury and then getting hurt again. He's pretty notorious for that. So I understand. I see what you're saying, Eric. I wouldn't mind them doing that, but have him sitting out the Memphis game. Cause if he played and what, if he got hurt again, now what? Now he's out again. And now we're kind of SOL, you know, but I don't know. Sixers are playing well. Tobias is going off. Shake has been phenomenal for us. I mean, tonight Tobias hasn't had a good game at all. He only has 4 points at halftime. But Embiid has 15 and 4 rebounds. Sean, your favorite guy in the whole world on the Sixers, Danny Green, has 14 points. So
don't start.
Nah, but we'll see. I mean, going down the stretch, we need him to play late through. We need him later in the games, every game. So maybe a little load management, but I understand what you're saying, Eric. Maybe 20 games, 20, not 20 games, 20 point, 20 minutes and 20 minutes wouldn't be that bad, really. It'll help him out, you know, just get back into a groove of things. But I think because Embiid had at least like 12 in the first like quarter of the game, he only has 15 now. So I'm pretty sure they're starting to double him up in everything, or they're just pulling them out and letting them sit a little bit. But I don't know. We'll see it coming down the stretch. Shake Milton hasn't really – he has 6 points tonight in 10 minutes, so it's actually not that bad. And your favorite boy, Korkmaz, Sean, has six. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it comes down to the end. But our bench pieces are doing phenomenal behind Tobias and everything. Tobias has done phenomenal for us, so.
What worries me about Embiid is 100% his conditioning, because we know he's going to score, he's going to do his thing, but what really matters is in the playoffs, is he going to be able to play 30 to 35 minutes a night, sometimes even 40. And if we're letting him sit games where he's not doing any physical activity, maybe in practice or whatnot, the live action is 100% different for these athletes. And especially for Joel Embiid. I know he has his frequent freak accidents, but he needs to be playing. And what I kind of compare his situation to is Kawhi Leonard. Last year with the Clippers, he was load managing almost the entire season. And I know his teammates didn't like that. I know they had a lot of hotheads, like Beverly and whatnot. But Leonard did not play as well in the playoffs as he did the prior season. And I don't want that to happen with Embiid, where he gets out of a rhythm. And especially, I didn't even bring this up, the offense is playing differently, especially if they're getting more comfortable in roles without Embiid on the floor. We don't need some of these guys shooting an increased amount of shots, because when we have Embiid back, the offense is 100% different. When we don't have Embiid, it's a perimeter-centric offense. With Embiid, it's a three-level scoring offense. So I think he needs to be back mainly for his conditioning, but I think it will benefit the entire team if he's back. I think conditioning is no longer an issue for Embiid, said Connor. I wouldn't say that yet, especially if he's missing 20 to 25 games. He's already missed – he's probably missed around 20 games this season, maybe closer to 15. But if he misses 10 out of his next 30, I think there's probably about 25 to 30 games left in the season. But if he misses that many games, conditioning will definitely be an issue for him, because in the past we've seen he's not great with conditioning.
Yes and no. I agree with you, but I also agree with Connor on this too. Embiid came into the season conditioning. He would, mm-hmm. That was his main focus, was working to, so he can continue to play late in the games, overtime, whatever. But his conditioning, yeah, him sitting can be a problem. But in practice, though, him working through and still working on his conditioning, because you can do conditioning anyway. There's multiple ways you can do conditioning. And I'm pretty sure most likely they still have Dwight Howard and him going at each other at practice. Dwight Howard's stronger than pretty much not half the people in the league. That dude is a freak athlete still. Going up against him, going to push Embiid will be a lot stronger. So working on his conditioning, it's not really that big of a problem. Him sitting, yes, but I don't believe it's that big of an issue. We'll see time come down playoffs, but I don't think it's that big of an issue. I agree with Connor.
It is such a big difference from playing in the games to practicing. They can have him posting up on Dwight Howard, but they can't have him sprinting down the floor 25 times, setting screens, contesting shots, putting up contested jumpers, going to the free throw line. It's so different, especially in that live game aspect, because it's so much of a quicker pace. They're not going to have Embiid running like a dog for 45 minutes, just up and down the court. I think he needs the live game action. I think it will just keep him so much more crisp. But
who knows? I agree.
We'll see if it works. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's exactly where I was going with it. He doesn't need to play the full, his full minutes. But like you're saying, getting yourself ready for the game, doing those things that you do every day when you're coming back from an injury, it's very important to be consistent with those things. It's like if you get injured and you have to go to physical therapy, you're supposed to do it probably 5-6 times a week, because the more you do it, the quicker you'll heal, your body will feel better. And you're right, it's very different when you're in practice than when you're in game. Doesn't mean he has to go full force every game for 35 plus minutes, but to go in there for a period of time and still be able to impact the game a little bit, it's good for him, and in my opinion, it's good for the team too.
I think it's different for a center versus a guard, because center in live game action, you're going against people that are 230 pounds upwards, and you're playing physical mostly throughout the entire game. Unless you're Nikola Jokic, you're sitting in the post and you're battling. But for a guard, you just need to get conditioned and fight over screens. I think that that's a lot easier. But for a big like Embiid, where he lives in the paint and he gets all of his points from drawing fouls and just trying to create mismatches and just posting up in general, I think it's totally different in that aspect for Embiid. And that's really why I think it's important for him to get live game action, even if it's not 35 minutes a night, even on the nights when he's supposed to load manage and not play. Give him 20 minutes. I think we're going to be fine with the first or the second seed. I think we will end up seeing the Nets anyways. So,
but I mean, we'll see. We'll see come down the stretch how his conditioning manages up the whole time. We'll see how it goes. I think he'll keep it up, to be honest with you, the whole time. I think he will, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. And probably moving on to our most controversial topic of the night, it would be centered around Ben Simmons. Simmons has really struggled in the absence of Joel Embiid. He's been averaging under 14 points per game over his last 10 games, and he's had three games with less than four field goals made. It's really been concerning, but really what is aggravating is over the past 2 to 3 weeks, Ben Simmons has been moved from second to now third on the Defensive Player of the Year ladder. Currently, from where it sits, it's Rudy Gobert, Miles Turner, and then Ben Simmons. I'll let you guys start out with this one, but this one has really irked me.
Gobert is a joke. I think we all can agree on that. Ben should still be probably second right now.
Miles Turner.
I'm hoping that his lack of offense, you know, I understand his Defensive Player of the Year, but you have human beings, you know, ranking this and choosing this. And they could be looking at his overall game too as a factor. I'm hoping that's not the case because that wouldn't be fair. But I do think he belongs still probably second right now above Gobert, but probably still below Miles Turner. But yeah, it's definitely been frustrating. I think the one game, I don't know if it was 2 games ago or 3 games ago, he only had like 5 points. And yeah, it's been a struggle for him.
It's been ugly. It has been miserable games for him. But as far as Defensive Player of the Year, Gobert should never be up there. He doesn't lock down a single person, so let's be real about that. He just stands there and blocks shots occasionally. He's just tall and lanky. That's about it.
He gets a lot of boards because Mitchell goes like 13 for 39 every game.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not offensive rebounds.
Everybody can get a board at that point, dude. It's like that's just a cheating. That's cheating right there. Just throwing up bricks so your guy can get boards. And I'm pretty sure that's just offensive boards too on that. So let's be real. That's not defensive at all. But Miles Turner should be one. Ben still should be two. But as everybody seems to do with Ben Simmons, they look at his overall game every time with everything he does instead of like the things he actually does for the team. Like, yeah, not really scoring, but him driving through the paint, kicking out, he's facilitating. Now, obviously, the team has to make the points, has to shoot the three and shoot the ball and make it, but he's producing on that level more than anything right now for us. And, yeah, it's been beneficial. Would I like him to score more than 5 points a game? That'd be a lot more helpful because now you're not putting everything on Toby and Joel and B the whole time. And then, obviously, Shake's been very clutch for us, too, off the bench. And then you have a sprinkle of Korkmaz and Dwight Howard just maybe every now and then. Paul Reed's been a nice addition, too. He had, what, 8 points the other night or something like that. 7 points or something like that. 7 rebounds too. But Ben, I don't know. He said he's upset with himself, and very rarely do you like see players still mad at themselves and still suck. But I mean, it is what it is. As far as the player of the year, he still should be number two behind Miles Turner. Gobert should never ever be in the running ever again. Ever, because he sucks. He's overrated. I would put Jokic over him, to be honest with you.
Defensive player of the year?
Over Gobert.
I thought you said defensive player of the year. I was going to say.
Over Gobert. Let's sprinkle in Matisse while we're at it.
He's sixth on the defensive player of the year ladder.
That's insane.
Should be fourth. Mm-hmm.
And right in front of him is TJ McConnell. So that's crazy to see two bench players on the list.
What?
It's crazy.
What? TJ?
TJ McConnell leads the league in steals.
He had like 9 steals in like the first half of one game. I do remember that.
He leads the league in steals or he's second. He's hovering over it. But what I think about this whole Ben Simmons thing, the offensive thing actually isn't very concerning. I see light at the end of the tunnel. And I think it's not a good thing. I'm not going to say it's a good thing. But what I will say is now that Embiid and Simmons seemed like they need each other and they need to play together. It was always the biggest issue was, could they make the spacing work on the floor? They'll never work together. Now we're seeing Simmons plays his best basketball when Embiid is on the floor. And Embiid actually plays his best basketball when Simmons is on the floor. So it's not good that he's not scoring right now as well. But, I mean, the game that Embiid came back, he had 14 points shooting like 5 for 9, which is – better than the 6-point outings he's shown recently. Connor Quigley said, Thibault leading the league in steals per game right now. I think he leads in per 36 in steals and also like shot deflections. So He's up there in almost every defensive category. I think if he was a full-time starter, he'd probably be the leader in defensive player of the year. But what I think about Ben Simmons with defensive player of the year is he should be number one. And I don't care about Miles Turner or Rudy Gobert. I think right now in the NBA, it's so easy for these bigs to play defense. There's not many talented centers. Like,
yeah,
outside of Embiid and Jokic, who is a center that is leading their team in scoring? Who's a guy that is just the main person on their offense? And I think it's very easy for centers right now. What Ben Simmons does on the defensive end is just mind-boggling. He can guard 1 through 5. I know he primarily guards 1 through 4, but he guards the best player on almost every team, unless it's really the Nuggets with Nikola Jokic. But he can guard on the perimeter. He can guard in the post. He is, I believe, tied for league leader in steals. He averages 1.6, and he's also 14th in loose balls recovered. I believe he averages 0.7 on offense and 0.6 defensively. So it shows the hustle is there. It shows, obviously, the skill is there. And he kind of reminds me of Draymond Green, but he won back-to-back defensive players of the year. I don't think anyone thinks Rudy Gobert deserves it, like we just all said. And Miles Turner, I think, is even better than Gobert on defense due to his versatility. But the NBA needs to go back to that time where perimeter players can win this award, kind of like Michael Jordan. It's not a big centered league right now where the bigs control the league. So I think Ben should be first. I'm pissed off that he's third, that he's dropped, but it's kind of ridiculous that he's not first.
I agree. It's upsetting he's not first, but Miles Turner has been hands down one of the best defensive players in the whole league.
Like, they're 22-26, not in the playoffs.
But that doesn't – bro, what's that got to do with anything, dude? You've had Cy Young winners who have been on teams who are garbage, bro. Come on.
I guess it doesn't have
– It doesn't matter. Like, that is like as garbage as like – in my mind, that what you just said is kind of saying the MVP needs to be on the playoff team. Like, let's be real. Like, if we're going straight numbers wise, like, there's players who aren't going to be in the playoffs at all who are doing good, doing damn, or literally the MVP of their
team.
That's
Bradley Beal. But yeah, he's not in the race because of their record. Defensive player of the year is a little bit different than MVP.
Exactly. But the way you have put it that way. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, Miles Turner's team is garbage. Like, let's be real. His team sucks. But what's that got to do with him being a solid defensive piece in the league, a dominant defensive player of the year? He's been dominant as a defensive player this entire year. Rudy Gobert, we can just throw him out the window. I could care less. He sucks. He's not a defensive asset for that team. He just stands there and occasionally blocks shots. He's not even tops in the league in block shots per game. Like, Miles Turner is, he's what, 3.2, 3.3 per game at this point?
I think he's still over 3.
That's nuts. And Ben Simmons is still up there with his rating. Not blocks per game, but he has steals per game.
Yeah,
he's still up there. Like, it's a lot of this is a popularity contest. But it's just, I get annoyed with it.
What my point was is that Ben is guarding the best player night in and night out. Miles Turner is guarding whoever the biggest. It doesn't matter if he's guarding a Wendell Carter Jr. or not. Ben Simmons is taking the best point guard, or he's taking the best power forward or the best small forward. And I think the versatility is just why he deserves the award. It's not like he's guarding the fourth best scorer. He's always guarding the best scorer unless it is Nikola Jokic. I think that's really the only example I can't think of unless it's a center or unless Embiid's out. So Connor said Turner is definitely dominant. Numbers get a little bit inflated when the rest of your team sucks. So yeah, they're not very, it's weird with them. I think their injuries have really killed that team, especially with Caris LeVert and TJ Warren. They should definitely be a playoff team though. And I know there's a few teams right now in the mix for the playoffs, whether it's the Hornets or the Knicks. I think the Wizards have completely dropped out of it. So I think they can sneak into it. They're very talented. But his numbers are definitely inflated, while Ben Simmons, I don't think they really are, especially since they have another great perimeter player who gets 20 minutes a night and Matisse Thybulle. So you can look at it from either way, but they're both dominant players.
It'd be nice to see a non-big win it, Because I feel like recently it's been mostly, you know, centers, and they look at blocks, you know, things like that.
Really, yeah.
But it would be nice to see somebody else. And like you said, Sean, it's one of those things that you don't see in a stat, but he does guard the best player on the other team game in and game out. And, you know, that has to be a factor. It has to be considered when they're deciding who should win it.
I agree. I mean, we'll see what it comes down to. We still got, what, 25 games left in the season. We'll see what it comes down to. So there's still a lot of time, a lot of basketball, a lot of ball to be played out here. But, I mean, it is what it is, and I will continue to say this every week until it happens, sixes and seven.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Defensive Player of the Year winners over the past, like, 25 seasons, and there hasn't been a guard in – forever, since Michael Cooper, actually, in 1987 is the last time there was a point guard or shooting guard. So, wow. I mean, yeah, which is crazy. It's filled with bigs like Dikembe and Ben Wallace, Marc Gasol, which is ridiculous.
Ben Wallace.
But outside of, I guess you can consider Giannis, he's a power forward, but he is more of a post defender. And then Kawhi Leonard, which was good to see, who's a small forward. You know, I don't know what you consider Ben. He's a point guard for us, but the league can look at him as a small forward because of his size.
He's big.
But, yeah, well, we consider him to be a guard. But it would be good to see that guard or forward positional player win the award. So I just think that would be refreshing to see. We'll see what the voters say. It's not like we're the fourth best defensive team in the NBA. But I guess we have to let the voters decide.
Yeah.
But
we're not
moving off that topic, because that was definitely a heated topic. The 76ers are defeating the Boston Celtics currently in the third quarter, 79-58. It's definitely good to see. Joel Embiid has 24 points and 6 rebounds. He's leading the team, as well as Danny Green, who has 14, which is as well good to see. And Ben Simmons now, he has 8 points in the second half.
12.
We just went on.
12
yeah,
points.
8 points in the second half, 12 wow. total. Yeah, so he's – ever since we started talking about him, he started to score. So that's good to see. Those are the only three in double figures. Shake Milton has 6, Tobias and Seth all with 7. But the Celtics, no one's really lighting up the scoreboard. Brown has 10, Tatum has 12, and Marcus Smart has 13. But it's definitely good to see a dominant performance again. I feel like we haven't got that type of win since Embiid has been out, where it's just been all Sixers.
Yeah, I like it. It's looked nice. I mean, Tobias isn't playing up to what he's normally doing tonight, which is, I mean, he's probably tired from carrying the team recently, so whatever. I'll give him a break. You know, it's nice to see Embiid out there. He's got 24-6. You know, Ben scoring above 3 points, so that's really nice. Danny Green above his average, so that's nice. But, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Celtics aren't playing well. They suck anyway this year, so it is what it is. They only have 12 points in the second half, so, and honestly, they're not a good team. Like, they're kind of garbage. But
it doesn't make any sense too.
It does.
Yeah, kind of shocking this year. Yeah,
it really doesn't. But I think, like, a lot of the cohesion between these guys kind of went out the window, like, after the bubble for some reason. Like, I have no idea. And then, like, with Kemba Walker really there too, like, a lot of, like, everything that was molded in together kind of flew out the window, really, like, completely off the wayside. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Kemba Walker, but with Marcus Smart, Tatum, Brown there, the chemistry kind of went out the window. And I mean, it is what it is. It happens to the best of every team. Like, it eventually happens to everybody, but I don't know. Celtics are the Celtics. I mean, they'll always be the Celtics. We always usually have problems with them for some apparent reason. I don't know why. We've always had problems with them.
We would always get out-coached.
Yeah, we'd always got out-coached, but not this year because we don't got stupid Brett Brown.
It's weird with the Celtics, too. Even though tonight they don't have Evan Fournier, he's a very good scorer, but they're still so talented at guard and forward. With right now just starting tonight is Kemba Smart, Tatum, and Jaylen Brown. They're so good offensive and defensively, and a lot of teams don't value the center anymore, but that seems to be their weakness. I think that's obviously why we're beating them tonight. Joel has 24 going into the fourth quarter with still 5 minutes left, but a lot of teams don't value the center like we do, and it really shows how valuable it is. And a lot of these teams that are very good this year outside of really the Nets, Now the Lakers have Andre Drummond and the Nuggets have Jokic, but I really think the center is very important, and a lot of teams with bad records are finding out why.
Yeah. Eric, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I just think it's been very shocking how poor they've been playing this year. But, you know, like Reggie brought up earlier, there's still a lot of ball to be played. It's just kind of like shocking because at this point we're like normally getting, you know, the last week or so of games in and we're thinking playoffs. We're still thinking, you know, what are these teams going to look like 2, 3, 4 weeks from now? And a lot can change. A lot can change at the end of the season, guys. You know, a lot of teams at this point, you got to remember too, last season in the bubble, this season started very, very quickly. So yeah, the guys in the beginning of the season may have been, you know, energized, like, yeah, we're right back in it. I think a lot of guys are getting fatigued right now. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of guys get more rest. And I think towards the end of the year, these teams that have been struggling, I think we're going to see a lot of shakeup in the standings a little bit more than usual. You got teams that'll be more fatigued, you got teams that are resting now that might be a little bit, you know, healthier. So it's going to be a big between now and the end of the season. I think we're going to see a lot of difference in the standings than there is right now. And the Celtics could be one of those teams that jump up a couple spots.
They're a team I don't want to see in the playoffs because even though they're not having a great season, Brad Stevens is still a great coach, and he'll be the coach to throw aggressive double teams consistently at Joel Embiid. And that is what worries me. And with their perimeter shooting, we all know 3-point shots win ball games. So I think they have a very good team. It's just who is going to be playing center, because if the double teams aren't working, if our shooters are hitting their shots, that is just going to open up the floor for Embiid. So, but they're a team that does scare me just because of the amount of talent they have on the perimeter. There's not a lot of teams with that type of perimeter talent. But I think that's going to wrap up the 76ers, moving into the most exciting part of Philadelphia sports. Over this past weekend, the Philadelphia Phillies started their season against the Atlanta Braves. They swept them in 3 games. Philadelphia just played great on all assets. Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, and Zach Eflin combined for 20 and two-thirds innings, allowing only 3 runs total, which is amazing. But the most shocking part of the Philadelphia Phillies so far this season was the bullpen, allowing 0 runs through 6 1/3. That was definitely the worst part of Philadelphia Phillies baseball last season, was we couldn't hold on to a lead because of the bullpen. But now it seems to be different through 3 of the 162 games. But it was very, very exciting to watch this Philadelphia Phillies team. It's been different in the past few seasons, but this was a great start to the baseball for the Phillies.
Yeah, honestly, that was beautiful. And my boy Zach Wheeler coming in clutch out there, hitting RBIs left and right for us. What, tied in for our team lead in RBIs?
Yep.
Absolutely nuts. But, I mean, he got kind of showed up this weekend by Shohei Ohtani, who hit a 451-foot bomb, and then he threw a 101-mile-an-hour fastball. But, you know, whatever. That's besides the point. I'm surprised more with our bullpen. You know, I knew we'd be nice this year with our bullpen, but we held a team who went to the NLCS last year to 2-3 runs. Absolutely hit. That's incredible. I mean, granted, only Wheeler got the win, but that's Wheeler Eflin. Wheeler got the win.
Yeah.
So that's nuts, you know, like very rare. Like last year, that would have never happened. We would have had to kept putting up at least 12 runs for that, like for us to win. But I mean, last year we were 0-15 in games we played, and we only scored 2 runs. We're 1-0 so far this year. You know, it's a testament to how well we got in our bullpen. You know, Alvarado, Kinsler was real nice the other game. Bradley was nice. Hector Neris' stuff is absolutely filthy already, which is a beautiful sight so far. I mean, it's early on the season, obviously. I'm not trying to get my hopes too high because, you know, they're all going to get shot down. Pretty typical Philadelphia fan style. But I'm going to say I'm very happy, pleasantly surprised with our bullpen so far.
Yeah, after the last game, Rhys Hoskins was talking, and you know, he talked about the confidence level of the team right now. They're having fun out there. They have a lot of confidence. And what I'll say is this, it's a trickle effect when the pitching is doing well. You know, the hitters, they don't feel that need that they have to score 6 to 8 runs a game. Because then when that happens, then they start focusing on the power. They start trying to hit home runs all the time. I believe the Phillies have only hit one home run so far. It was Andrew Knapp. Yep. And other than that, they've generated runs in other ways. And that's not what the Phillies have been doing, you know, routinely the past couple years. So Ryan said, Vinny V is back. Yeah, he was in the game today, right? Right.
He started all strong. All right.
He just let up a run. So
he literally struck out the side of his first three, like struck out everybody in a row. Comes in, gets a strikeout, walks. The base is loaded, and then walks a run in.
At least not in
his fashion.
He has four walks in an inning and a third tonight. So
four walks, four strikeouts. That is glorious.
Yeah, he had a great start to the game. It's not it's not looking too hot after the first inning.
Vinny V.
What I will say about the Phillies, the defense has been fantastic and the pitching has been just phenomenal on all aspects. I wouldn't say I'm too worried about the Phillies hitting, because we've seen last year in our offense how great it was. I think we were fourth in total runs. And it hasn't been like we have been totally disappointing so far to start the season. But we only have 14 runs in four games. That's about 3.5 per game. It ranks 22nd. And we have 44 strikeouts. We do have a lot of power hitters, but that comes with strikeouts, so that makes sense. We have 44 strikeouts. And like you said, we only have one home run tonight or on the season. I think Didi Gregorius had one tonight, so two home runs, which is not like the Phillies hitters. But I wouldn't want to rely on our pitching. I think our offense will come steadily back, and I think that will be very important for this team. But it's very good to see the pitching, just how good as it's been so far. So I think all aspects will be important.
Hey, Sean, you think Zach Wheeler could play center field for us one of his days off?
So no.
In the lineup?
Why?
He's not a Tani.
Bro, come on, man. He can hit.
It's good to know if we're in a situation and like the I don't think it's gonna happen with the new extra inning rule, but if we're the 18th inning and we need someone to bat off the bench and we used everybody, you know, he'll be the first pitcher in line.
Dude, he's going out there. I mean, like, I think Philly's pitchers as of recently who could hit were him. Vince Velasquez could always hit. I don't know why, how he could. Actually, I know how. He was a shortstop growing up. That's how.
Oswald, when we had Oswald, he wasn't bad. And was he the one that the one game he had to play left field and he made it out? Was that him?
Him.
That was cool.
Him was like, he played, and then it was like 2 years ago, Vince Velasquez, they put him in left field. He made a diving catch and threw somebody out at home. Like back-to-back plays, I was like,
"Oh, right!"
And we just
remember that.
We just leave him out there. Don't pitch anymore, dude. Just stay out there. Learn to hit real quick. We can make use of you, but like, I don't know. We'll see. Vince Velasquez still sucks, but
you could put Eflin in left. I know it's pretty early.
Keep him at no. He's our third.
I'm sorry, Wheeler, but you could put him in. It's not. I wouldn't say it's concerning yet, but McCutchen is 2-for-12 on the season. It's really early, but you just have to hope he's in catching up to him, because that would be a huge issue. It's not like we are short on depth in our outfielders, especially with just the utility pieces we have, and we could always pull up with Dubel Herrera if it just doesn't go well. But, I mean
– Moniak will come up before him.
Yeah, Mickey too. That's right. See, we have so much depth in the outfield. Yeah.
No, I'm not
concerned. The lineup is nasty.
Yeah.
They'll find their groove. They'll find their power. It'll come, you know.
It'll still happen.
Early in the year.
Yeah.
Once we get them 85, 90-degree days, the ball's going to be flying out of the ballpark.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, Didi got a hold of it tonight. I was shocking. But, like, other than that, really, I'm not really too concerned about our power right now. It is what it is. I mean, not everybody's going to be hitting absolute bombs to start off the season. I mean, like, it happens. It's going to be that way. I mean, you have two of your three best hitters in your lineup coming off of injury. Let's be real. I mean, JT broke his thumb a month and a half ago.
And he's been hitting well so far. He got off to a good start.
He's been hitting well. Alex Bohm is just trying to get his groove back. You know, everyday starter. We kind of just threw him in last year and said, go play. But Harper, he's going to be okay. Either he starts hot or he starts off real slow and picks it up. It's either or for him.
He's very, very streaky. The guys, like I said earlier, the guys just seem like they're having a lot of fun together. And I think that's important. You know, that stuff, it spreads and it's, you know, it's contagious. I think they're having fun. But for me, the best thing has been the starting pitching, because what has been the biggest weakness? The bullpen, right? So we've been talking about a select few guys that we like out of the bullpen, Alvarado, Neris, Bradley, and Kinsler. If these starters, you know, let's face it, you're going to have a fourth and fifth starter. They may not be the best, but if our top three guys can consistently pitch seven innings, even six and a third, seven innings, you're only relying on those, your best guys out of the bullpen. You know, the saying, like, you're only as good as your weakest link. Well, if we don't have to go to guys like Velasquez and go to those other guys in the bullpen and stick to our strengths, stick to Alvarado, Bradley, and Neris game in and game out, we're going to do a lot better. And that's what we've seen. We've seen Neris, I think he pitched the first three games. I think Bradley had two appearances. So we're using our best guys and we're seeing the results from it. We're seeing good results out of the bullpen. We're seeing our starters go. I think Nola had about 85 pitches. I think Wheeler 90 and Eflin about 80. So, you know, with the three of them, they're averaging about 85 pitches and they all went roughly seven innings. I think Nola was like 6 1/3 or 6 2/3. So if they can pitch seven innings with roughly 80 to 85 pitches, that means when they get, you know, fully ready to go full strength and they go 100 pitches, we're looking at getting seven plus innings out of them game in and game out. And what that's going to do is set the team up, set the bullpen up to have our best guys in there at all times. And that's when we'll see them succeed. That's when we'll see some good results.
Yeah.
The bullpen's been fantastic, but I wouldn't say that's the story tonight. The Phillies are now down 6-1 to the Mets, all thanks to Vince Velasquez. We obviously haven't been able to watch the game, but he's now let up 4 earned runs on 4 walks and 4 strikeouts. So you can't – Chase Anderson, he pitched 5 innings, let up 2 hits, but now Vince Velasquez has almost single-handedly lost the lead.
Typical Vinny V fashion.
Yeah, this could be one of his last appearances, especially with everyone who's shown out so far in the season.
Eric, your boy's going to come back up then.
What'd you say?
Your boy's coming back up.
Who's my boy?
Spencer.
Oh, Spencer. I mean, well, that's the thing. You know, we were talking about the rotation. You know, Matt Moore and Anderson got the nod to start the season, but, you know, there's a chance that we may see guys like Spencer Howard come up throughout the year, or, you know, other guys step into the rotation at some point if they continue to struggle. But again, they're our fourth and fifth starter. We can't expect 7 shutout innings, you know, every single start from these guys. So those are the kind of nights when our offense is going to have to, you know, put up maybe 5, 6, 7 runs for us to have a chance. But, you know, you can't expect your pitcher to give up just one run or less every game, but it's nice. And it gives the batters a good, you know, feeling when they don't have to feel the pressure to go out there every game and try to score 8 runs, 10 runs a game.
Yeah, it'd be good for tonight, but unfortunately we only have 3 total hits and our only run is on a home run. So JT, DD, and Gene each have a hit to their names, but besides that, no one else is hitting the ball well. So we'll see though. Last night, the Phillies won 5-3, getting all 5 runs in the 8th inning, thanks to a JT hit, Bryce getting, I believe, his first RBI on the season by getting hit by a pitch, and Alec Bohm reaching first off of a aired throw to home plate. So we'll see if we can make magic tonight, just like we did last night against the Mets.
They got to get Stroman out of there. I think he's going to be out. He's out actually now. Stroman got replaced. So as long as we can get to the Mets bullpen, which seems to be our beautiful factor for us, is getting to the bullpen aspect of teams, then we'll be okay, because we dominated the Mets bullpen last night. We dominated the whole Braves bullpen, minus Charlie Morton on the Braves. Yep. Absolutely dominated him. He sucked. But we'll see. We just got to get starting pitchers out of there. We weren't getting DeGrom out of there last night, and then pulling him early saved us significantly.
Yep.
Well, I honestly couldn't tell you why they pulled him, because he was lights out. He had 11 strikes of 100 miles an hour.
That's even if they can't come back today, they'll be right back at it tomorrow at 4 o'clock. So, you know, they're not going to go 162-0. So if they lose tonight, you know, don't lose your confidence there. I think we still have a good squad, and I'm seeing big things from them this year. I think they're going to do better as long as that rotation stays good. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you all for watching the show. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be live again next Tuesday at 8:30. If you haven't already, please follow NSN and NSN Philly on Facebook. We're on Twitter, Instagram. We're now streaming on Twitch every week as well. So if you like and use Twitch, make sure you follow us on Twitch at Notoriety Sports. We're at Notoriety Sports on all the platforms. Thanks again for watching, and have a good night, everybody.
Peace out. We'll see you guys next week.